come to save the day.
Welcome to Mighty House. This is a radio show for people with problems.
Home improvement problems, that is.
And for people who want common sense guidance on how to build green and live a more sustainable lifestyle. If you have a home improvement hang-up, help is on the way. You can send an email or call into the show. The Mighty House crew is now on the job. This is
Mighty House.
I am Ron Cowgill, and the Mighty House team is back. We're broadcasting worldwide and live at MightyHouse.net and TuneIn.com. Just look for Mighty House. Podcasts and previous shows available at MightyHouse.net, iTunes, SoundCloud, the GLN Network, and on HomeImprovementUSA.com. And you can find links to all of them at MightyHouse.net. Follow us on Facebook. Just look for Mighty House Home Improvement Show, and our Twitter handle is at Mighty House. And, of course, you can use the hashtag Mighty House. Or you, too, can just give us a call, 773-763-9278. All right. And with that, we have a full house now.
Yes.
Yeah, we do. We're packed up here.
Email Robbie or Ron at MightyHouse.net. Sorry.
And the Small Business Advocacy Council, the SBAC, is a nonpartisan, member-driven organization that promotes the success of small business through political advocacy, networking, support services, and educational programs. The SBAC is dedicated to improving economic conditions for small to mid-sized businesses and being a voice for small business. For more information, you can visit them at sbacil.org. And
they had a really good golf outing on Monday.
With some awesome beef. At the dinner.
Oh, at the dinner.
Yeah. Now, the beefcakes were walking around, too. You were following them. There was like some firemen there or something you were following around, wasn't it?
Isn't that That's what that called was? Stalking, Ron.
Okay.
Oh, so I'll tell you the funny thing. When we were at the dinner with that couple, Ken and I think the name was Bonnie, for some reason, who said that they knew Ian. And, Ian's so nice and Ian's so wonderful and stuff. I said, yeah, he's kind of cute.
They don't know me well.
I said, yeah, he's kind of cute. And she says, oh, I'm too old for that. I'm like, never too old.
I don't even know who we're discussing, to be honest. I'm trying to put it together. I still haven't put it together.
Ken from MasterCraft.
Oh, sure.
Yeah,
know him
they
for
love
years.
You.
Know
yeah.
him for years. Good guy. Great guy.
Apparently, she doesn't think you're cute. Just
he's worried about it.
You can't please all the people all the time.
And when we were talking earlier, and I said you could comment about Ian to Ron at MightyHouse.net, or you could just go on Facebook as Andrea did and said, "Don't mess with the Mighty House women."
I'm playing. I'm not messing. There's a difference.
All right.
And who's sitting next to you now?
Jeff Merritt
from.
Homestead. I know him as NACHI,
yeah.
National Association of Certified Home Inspectors. He's the president of the local chapter.
Yes, president of the local chapter of the International Association of Certified Home Inspectors Chicago chapter.
And
that's a lot to say.
And your company is Homestead Inspections.
Homestead Inspections.
And your website?
www.homesteadinspectionsllc.com.
Oh, wow.
Homesteadinspectionsllc.com. And, you know, most home inspectors, they come in and they do the regular home inspections, but you have something a little unique, too, where you actually do mold inspections, so air quality testing also.
I've been doing this for 20 years.
Both or just what?
Started out in home inspections,
okay.
And then when the mold started becoming something, I decided to get certified in indoor air quality for mold, radon, and all the other stuff that goes with it. Because it seemed to be an extra trip to say, geez, I think I found mold in your attic. You got to hire a mold guy to come back and look. So, which extends the sales process and becomes a problem.
Right.
So, I went and got trained in indoor air quality, which includes mold, radon, and all that. So, now I do mold inspections too. So, when I'm in the attic, I can pull out a swab sample, take a swab sample, get it to the lab, and it's all done in one.
One
do you do that automatically or only if you have a feeling?
Only if it's looks like it.
Okay.
You know, and then I go through it with the client, talk to them about it, and ask them if they want to sample it.
But it's black mold. It's evil, right?
Yes, black mold. Stachybotrys. Evil stuff. It's going to kill me.
Uh-huh. Yeah. There's millions and millions of different types of mold.
That's correct.
And there's mold in this room. There's mold in every room. There's mold outside.
In my shower, which I treat with bleach, which Ron says is okay.
As long as it's on tile and not porous material.
Right.
Thank you.
See?
All right. Mold has its own kingdom.
Oh, yeah?
It's got its own little world it lives in.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And we have not seen all of the mold yet. Every day they discover more and more different types of mold. So,
Right. So it's only a very small percentage of those molds that pose any health threats.
Right. And most of it's usually like hay fever and stuff like that.
Okay.
The toxic ones, which is the black mold or the Stachybotrys, is the one that's mostly found in abandoned buildings where it's been wet and cold and
kind of the right growing conditions
and you got a mold farm growing.
But that's not to say that, you know, other molds that are discovered, despite the fact they may not be toxic, can still pose, you know, respiratory issues or, you know, discomfort, I guess, like I said, like hay fever and things
Absolutely.
Like that, which you don't want either.
Sinusitis, hay fever, all kinds of different stuff, you know.
Right. So just because it doesn't harm you, you know, you still need to address certain types of molds.
Sure, you have different toxicities with mold.
Okay.
So
if you have mold in your bathtub, is that something we need to worry about and call you in to test?
No. You need to clean your bathtub.
What?
Don't call me for sampling mold in your bathtub. Get out scrubbing bubbles or bleach or something and just clean the bathtub.
Cut out the caulk.
Right.
Clean it up.
If the caulk's bad, cut it out. Put in some nice antimicrobial caulk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what do they add? You know, that's a good question. Do you have any idea what they add to that antimicrobial caulk to do the mold in? Whatever it is, it doesn't seem that effective.
No. Not a clue. I don't know. That's probably one of those proprietary deals.
That's true. They wouldn't tell you. Well, they could tell you, but then, you know.
Right.
It's most likely got some peroxide in it.
Okay.
Isn't grout porous?
Yes, it is.
It is.
Unless you seal it.
Okay, because you said you could use it in the bathroom as long as it's not porous, but grout is porous.
You're supposed to seal grout. Yep. You know, all these new, all these new bathrooms with all the slate tile and stuff, all that tile's got to be sealed probably every 6 months to a year in some of these new million-dollar houses.
Mm-hmm. But people don't.
Because they don't know.
No, and, you know, we've been in homes where they get that white marble.
Carrera.
Love the look of it. They put it in
a
shower.
It is beautiful, isn't it?
And then moisture gets in there, and the mold starts growing in the pores of the marble.
Yep.
And you can't get it out.
Now, that white Carrera is so gorgeous, but I'll tell you what, just a little drip of toothpaste on it for a couple of days, and you've got a stain. Now, it'll come out, though. It's porous. Peroxide, again, take it out.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
You can't get it out?
No.
The mold out of there?
Sometimes it grows in there, and you just can't get it out. You can steam clean it and try and get it out, but it discolors the marble, and you always have that discoloration.
The marble scratches really easy, too.
Yeah.
You know,
people think, oh, it's rock. No, it's not.
Marble's one of the softer ones.
Stones
that scratches real easy.
Yep. Yeah. So, again, Jeff Merritt, Homestead Inspections, and we appreciate you coming in today. You mind taking a phone call real quick?
No, go ahead.
Because this is like right down your alley, I think, here. Mm-hmm. Let's go to Mike in Orland Park. Hey, Mike, you're on Mighty House.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Hey, listen, this is only our third day in this house we bought out here. We're out in the rural Orland Park area.
Okay.
It's our third day. I am presently in the basement right now because the inspector's coming out at noon. And on the first day we were here, we started using the facilities, and there was a slight odor of sewage. And then the second day it was a little more, and now today is the third day, and I am presently in the basement walking around, but it is so potent that I actually took a little bit of peanut butter and rubbed it on my mustache so I could be down here. That's how bad it is. And I'm walking around down here, and I don't see anything wrong at all. But we have septic, and it is so powerful that, oh my God, it's Wayne Bessems down here sleeping with his mouth open. Mike, get out of here,
thanks,
Wayne.
Mike.
Get out of here.
There you go.
Okay.
you got punked again, Trixie.
Usually they punk us with decay.
Sorry. Yeah, see? And Mike, I had this all ready for you. Let me see if I can find it now here real quick.
Hey, I'm Dick K. Mighty House is mighty fine.
See, I had that all ready for you, Mike. You went with the wrong guy.
I can't believe it.
Now I got to get some of these from Wayne.
Yeah.
Here they come to save the day. Mighty House is mighty fine. I'm Dick Kay. I'm here.
There
all right,
go.
Let's just forget all of that.
Okay, so if you hire a home inspector, what should we be looking for? Because a home inspector, you go down, you pay your $50 for the state, you take a quick little test maybe.
No, not that easy anymore.
Huh? Yeah.
Not that easy anymore.
Well, okay, explain this process.
Yeah, it's not that easy anymore. You've got to take your course, which NACHI offers online.
Do you have to take the NACHI course?
No, you don't. You can take any one of the other schools. But
okay.
InterNACHI offers an online pre-licensing course.
Okay.
You have to do 5 ride-alongs with a licensed inspector to get your field testing in.
Is that state required?
State required.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. The state is up the ante on getting your license. The average time to get your test time now is about 2.5 times to get through the test.
Wow.
Most inspectors that I monitor, they're becoming new inspectors. Are really frustrated because they don't pass the first two. I just got a phone call last night. He says, "Hallelujah, finally I passed it on my third try."
Wow.
And this guy had experience in the trades too.
Really?
So,
well, so, you know, my frustration, I probably Ian's too, is we follow these guys, or at least we used to in the 90s, early 2000s. The guy was he was an accountant last week, and now he's a home inspector walking around telling us what needs to be done. And it was frustrating for us to follow these guys and go, "Well, there's nothing wrong with this." Or this is how you do it. They just didn't know what they were looking at. It's good to know now that there's a little bit more involved in getting your license.
And the standards have come up since 2002 for the first licensing.
Yeah.
From 2002 to the crash, we had over 3,500 inspectors. That got cut down to 720.
Wow.
Really? Okay.
That's now we're back up to around 1,800. So, you know, making the $1 million in home inspection is not there anymore.
Well, that's amazing. I'm amazed at how fast those numbers, you know, went back and forth. That you went from 700 to 1,800 in that short period of time. So that's a lot of people in the field. That's a big increase.
Compared to what we had, though, it's really not. So, but that's,
I gotcha.
That's fine. But no, the requirements, InterNACHI requires, the state requires you have 12 hours every 2 years to retain your license. The InterNACHI requires 24 hours every year.
Oh, wow.
To keep up your certification. So the certification process has come up, and InterNACHI and we at NACHI Chicagoland, we strive on education. We want everybody, we have people coming in, as you do, Ron. And
oh, yeah.
Teach us about different stuff. We like to educate our inspectors and make sure they know what's going on.
Because
every year something new comes out that we got to go out and look at and go,
what is it?
What
well,
is this?
That's the thing, too. I've always wondered, you know, pardon me, the what, you know, I was going to ask you, what percentage of your referrals come from realtors?
I've been doing this for 20 years. Mine is probably 30%. The rest is all past referrals. Yeah.
That's great. That's great. Because I've always had an issue with that. Most people don't check out the reputation of their home inspector, right? They don't look at reviews. They don't see. They don't call past clients or get references. The realtor simply says, here's a couple of home inspectors that I work with.
Or here's one. Call
or
them.
Here's one. That's correct. And I've always felt that was kind of a conflict of interest, right? Because if the realtor keeps calling the same home inspector and he keeps slamming every house that he inspects, how long is that realtor going to refer that guy?
Right.
So she wants the yes man, or I shouldn't say she, that's a bad thing, the realtor. I just happen to have a female realtor.
No, you don't have to explain. It's okay.
Well, I've already been lambasted, you know. So, but you get where I'm going with this,
but that,
right?
Yeah, but that was before. Nowadays, because of the litigious society we live in, most realtors really do want a good inspector. And if you kill a deal, they don't mind. They'd rather find their client another house because their name's attached to it, too.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the realtors that refer me are all looking for a decent inspection. And if the house falls through, it falls through.
So other than buying a new home, do I need my house inspected? So I've, you know, had one home inspection in my life. Do I need it again? Do I ever need one if I'm not
buying a house?
Depends
on how handy you are. I mean, I do home maintenance inspections for people. They call me up and I come through and I look at all their stuff. I look at the roof, look at the heating, air conditioning, make sure
that's a great service.
And that's you know, you can do that every 3 or 4 years. And I can tell you that you got some loose shingles or your chimney needs tuck pointing.
Because if you call your furnace guy, he's going to tell you need a furnice. Yeah. A roofing guy's going to tell you need a roof.
No, that's exactly right. You're an impartial third party to come and assess the property and give you a realistic, you know, assessment of what may be going on. And it's that old adage that your mother tried to teach you. Listen, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
Sure.
No question about it. You don't want these things to go undetected for long lengths of time.
And if you go out and you do the inspection and you find these things wrong, you say, oh, by the way, here's my card. I can fix them for you too, right? Don't you do that?
No, I don't. No, I say, oh, by the way, here's a list of contractors you can call that can fix these things.
There you go. Exactly.
So is there a price difference between a home inspection because I'm buying a new house and a maintenance inspection?
Yes. Home inspections run between $350 all the way up to $600,000, $700,000, $800,000, $900,000, depending on the size of the home.
Can you hold on a second?
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back with Jeff Merritt and your phone calls. If you've got an inspection question, give us a call, 773-763-9278. We'll be back right after this.
This is Mighty House. Mighty House will return.
the truck, I just kind of lay back, because my brother-in-law's there to pick up all the slack. Sometimes I don't make it out of the sack, because I'm a big-time remodeler. Daddy worked with his hands till the day he died. He only had six fingers, but at least he tried. Said he had a license, but I know he lied. I'm a big-time remodeler. Well, I got me a fine wife, swings a mean hammer, does all my books, keeps me out of the slammer. Play a lot of golf, so I keep a getting tanner. I'm a big-time remodeler.
We're broadcasting worldwide and live at MightyHouse.net and TuneIn.com. Just look for Mighty House. Podcasts or previous shows available at MightyHouse.net, iTunes, SoundCloud, the GLN Network, and on HomeImprovementUSA.com. You can find them all at MightyHouse.net. Follow us on Facebook by looking for Mighty House Home Improvement Show. And our Twitter handle is at Mighty House. Coming up at 9:40, we have Mighty House Greenhouse, sponsored by Devon Bank. I've been a Devon Bank customer for over 25 years, and they're great people to work with. They're locally owned, independent, and committed to our communities since 1945. And you, too, can give us a call, 773-763-9278, if you've got a question about home inspections or anything else going on in your house.
I'm a big-time remodeler. Yeah, I'm a big-time remodeler.
I think that we should get to the phone call really quick, but we're cut off when you were saying my most important thing, how much it costs to get a home inspection for buying a new house versus a maintenance inspection.
And this is Jeff Merritt, if you're just tuning in, from Homestead Inspections. Go ahead.
LLC.com.
So home inspection costs anywhere from $350 up to thousands of dollars, depending on the size you are. A home maintenance inspection can cost as little as $175, $200 just to come out and take a look at your home.
But wouldn't I want the whole thing done? What are you cutting out to do the maintenance inspection as opposed to the whole? What's the difference?
You're not going to look at. I'm not going to look at your dishwasher. I'm not going to look at your stove, your refrigerator, all that stuff you know that's working. We're gonna look at foundations, but we're not going to look for specific things that you may have had repaired already, like cracks in the foundation. If you've already had PermaSeal or somebody out. You know, we already know that's done. You already know that. So we don't, there's certain things we don't have to look at hard as that, you know. So
it's a
quicker process.
Right. It's an overview.
Yeah.
Of everything and all the systems in the house.
But if somebody wanted to do the whole thing.
Full on. And you're not checking every outlet and all the circuits.
Right, yeah. All the outlets.
With the home
switches.
Inspection, you check every outlet?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. If the ones you can get to. Some do, some don't, but I do. Every outlet I can reach, I plug my tester into. Every window that I get to, that I can get to, I open and close, make sure there's not a broken spring. So, like, in your house, you know, you're going to know which outlets are working, which ones aren't, which windows have broken springs, which ones have broken seals. I'm not going to pay attention to that. I'm going to look at your major stuff, roofing, heating, air conditioning, plumbing, and stuff like that.
Wow.
So there's the difference.
Got it.
You know you need new windows.
Will you look for mold?
It's in my nature.
Yeah, he's.
I'm always looking for water leaks and mold. I just happen to, because it's what I do.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's cool.
And if we could get to the phone call, because Eric has been holding for quite a while.
You want to go to Eric in Park Ridge?
I would like to.
Hey, Eric, you're on Mighty House. Thanks for hanging on.
Hey, good morning, everyone.
Good
morning.
I have a question, and I guess I have a second question based on the inspection topic. But the first question is, I have a 1968 split ranch with window wells. They're sheltered from direct weather by overhangs. And I had to reset the corrugated liners because they've settled.
Mm-hmm.
So there's pipes, stand pipes in there that connect to the perimeter drains. And they're a couple of inches below the windowsills in the well. And my question is, how should I grade that and finish that so that the drainage is proper? And I was thinking about covering it all up then with golf ball size river rock so I can get leaves out of there easily.
Okay, so what's in the bottom of it now? Is it just mud?
Yeah, it's just dirt, clay.
Okay. So then, you know, at the top of that standpipe, does it have a strainer on it, or is it just an open pipe?
It does have a strainer on it.
Okay. So then, yeah, if you can just cover that up with a little bit of gravel, leave the standpipe where it's at, as long as it's below the the windowsill. You don't know how many I go to, and I see that that standpipe's actually higher than the bottom of the basement window.
Right. So, yeah, I've seen that one, too.
Yeah. So, and that's why I measured. It's close. Yeah.
I think it's good policy to dig a little bit of clay out, maybe excavate a few inches so you can get some river stone or something like that in there and you know.
Right. As long as the pipe is sticking up above that and you've got 2 or 3 inches above that, then you can throw some stone in there if you need to dig it out. You don't want that pipe to be below the gravel. That's the important thing.
Okay. All right. And that was my question, whether I needed to raise the dirt, but I'm hearing just leave it as it is and put the rock in.
Correct.
Yeah, it's really the elevation of the standpipe, you know, relative to the sill pipe.
And
yeah. Right. Yeah, you want the standpipe or the drain, mm-hmm. get down to common words here, the right. drain to be just a little bit below the bottom of the sill, so you don't get water coming up through the window if whenever it does flood. Best thing to do is actually cover those window wells, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Get window
absolutely.
Well covers.
Window well covers, absolutely.
Yeah. And then the other thing is you'll see a lot of older homes where they've just kept throwing stuff in over top of them or leaves have filled up, and those pipes that are still in there, but they're buried now. So if you've got these window wells and you clean them out really good, and dig down a little bit in the middle, you might find that pipe. So that tells you that it's in there. You need to dig all that out and leave that pipe exposed with a strainer on the top. That's the best way to drain those window wells out. So yours are good because you know it's there.
Yeah, if you find one like that Ron's talking about, you probably should check to make sure it's not plugged up.
Yeah, right. A lot of them are plugged. But,
yeah, run a garden hose.
But I'm with you on that one, Jeff. Window well covers are, in my world, imperative. Okay, yeah. Because the drains are always susceptible to clogging, to not working, other issues with the drain tile, sump pumps, etc. Your bedding, your basement, and your you know, on that thing's going to work 100% of the time.
Right, and for $30, you can buy a nice cover and be done.
Yeah, I don't know about $30. They've gotten expensive depending on what you want and the size of the window well, but
yeah,
some of them are pricey.
All right, how's that, Eric?
That sounds great. And the second question I have is I've had my bathroom redone and have a new vent in there, but I believe I did have some moisture issues then in the attic before the remodel.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, if I've still got some like black stain on the sheathing, is there a way to clean that off? Such that when I do go to sell the house, you know, it doesn't trip an inspection issue.
Well, it'll most likely trip an inspection issue if you don't do something with it. My professional advice is you call a professional remediator and have them take care of it. There's mm-hmm. a couple of companies that can take care of that. that way it's done and you have paperwork that says it was done. You don't necessarily need a mold test because you don't want to tag your house as a mold house. You don't want to have to disclose that. You can just say you had the attic cleaned.
Mm-hmm.
So you can look under, you know, mold remediation. Just Google it up. There's a couple of companies out there.
Yeah, Mold Chicago is one we use a lot, and those guys are great. And I've known them for quite a few years. So long time ago, they used to sponsor the show, too. So moldchicago.com for more information.
And there's no guarantee that it is mold. It can just be discoloration of the sheathing oftentimes.
Yeah, it could be.
Yep. So... So that happens a lot too. So, take care of you there, Eric.
That's it. Thanks, guys and girls.
Thank you.
All right. We'll talk to you later.
Yeah, I think it's important. Bye-bye. I think it's important not to be shy of that either. You know, people say, "Oh, I don't want." You know, it's kind of like better not to know anything than it's not always mold. Sometimes it's just some discoloration of the sheathing, and that way you got some peace of mind. Have it checked out. You know, by a remediator and go from there.
And if it's right above where your bath fan used to be or is. Then that tells you that bath fan isn't vented outside, and you need to properly vent it outside so that way it doesn't continue to happen.
Just did one in Lake Forest, 3 bath vents, all vented into the attic, mm-hmm. and get this one, a 6-inch piece of duct for the hood vent. Ducted straight into the attic space, only about three inches above the insulation.
Yeah, with grease coming sleek.
No connection.
I can't tell you how many times I've cracked open an attic hatch and just had the mold come pouring down on top of me, and I've closed the hatch back up and go out to my car and get my... N100 mask.
Get the respirator out. The scuba gear, the whole enchilada.
Yeah, right. Go up and look and go, okay, fine.
The hazmat suit.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
We have a couple emails. One said, this is from Hale, I believe, for oiling in those hard-to-reach places like roof exhaust fans.
Yep.
He said, try Zoom Spout Oiler. You guys familiar with that?
No, I'm not, but it sounds like sounds like something. Oh, you are familiar with it?
Yeah, I have one for my attic fan.
Oh, there you go. Now, so describe this device. It's just like a tube.
It's a piece of plastic, and it's just it just comes out you know, it folds into it, slides into the thing, and you just zip it out. It comes out to about 12 inches, so you can reach up there.
Right. Yeah, usually what I do is I've got some 3-in-1 oil, and I just have a small piece of very fine surgical tubing that I just stick on the nose of it so I can manipulate it and bend it around.
3-in-1 has a nice can that has a spout up built into it.
Oh, see, I see. I'm trying to be innovative here.
Uh-huh. They already do it.
Yeah.
There you go.
Specially right. designed telescoping spout. Yep. Laco, LA-CO.
Oh, I'm familiar with Laco. Sure, they make
Zoom
a bunch of great products.
Can reach up to 7 inches to lubricate motors, bearings, and more.
But you remember the oil cans with the little lever on it?
Yeah, still got one.
Yeah.
It's collecting dust.
Uh-huh. There you go.
Yeah.
And you squeeze the handle and had a little tube on the end of it.
You know what I use that for, Al? I use it for gasoline.
Oh, there you go.
To get things started. I got a lot of different engines laying around.
Oh, okay.
Need a little love.
And
instead of starter fluid, you just use that.
Oh, yeah. Starter fluid. You don't need that stuff.
Nah.
That's ether anyway. It's bad for the engine.
And we have a question with a photo. Sorry, you can't see it, Ron.
Okay.
There is rust on the support pole in my basement. There is no longer any moisture. What is the best way to clean it up and prepare it to be painted? Thanks, Matt.
Well, that one I would look at. I would start knocking the rust off and see how deep it goes to make sure you don't have rust going all the way through the bottom of that column.
You got it.
And then once you figure out if that column is still structurally sound, clean it up and get some primer on it and paint it.
Well, what is the best way to clean it up?
Elbow grease.
Wire brush.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, which is the best way to test that for corrosion, just like they test aircraft tubes and parts, is they usually take an awl, okay, like a, you know, fine-pointed awl.
All your tools? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, well, you know an awl, you know.
It's all your tools.
Yeah, exactly, all your tools, A-W-L, awl.
Oh, okay.
And anyway, it's got a fine point, and they'll tap around in there for corrosion and see if you can penetrate it, right? If you can't penetrate it, then you don't have a major corrosion issue. It's still structurally sound. Clean it up with a wire brush. There's a product out there I've used called Rust Buster. They actually tell you on the can you can paint over scale, believe it or not. I have a boat cradle. We keep a sailboat in. It's just a steel cradle. It's a frame, right? It sits out weather all year long.
Mm-hmm.
I painted it one coat. It's been on there 9 years. There's not a rust spot on it.
Really?
I can't believe it.
Yeah. One coat?
One coat, believe it or not, yes.
No. Ike's going to call.
No, Ike, this is a boat cradle, though, not a living room wall. And so, you lay it on kind of thick. I don't know. They've probably reformulated it, to be honest with you.
And there's also another one that I've used that actually works is Rust Buddy. You spray it on and you leave all the scale on there.
That's what this said to do, and sure enough, it worked.
It bonds through there, and it's amazing.
It is amazing.
I've done it on trailers.
Was yours about the consistency of toothpaste? Because
yes.
That's what this was.
Yes. But it's like soaks in. You can see it soaking into the rust, and then it makes it really hard. It turns it black, and it's done. Okay.
And then you can paint over it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That gets me to my next latest thing is Deck Restore.
Can I just ask
here we go. I want to hear
this.
One
quick question. So if the corrosion does go all the way through,
you got to resupport it and put a new column in.
Yep.
You can cut it and sleeve it and weld it, or you can just replace the whole column.
Remove and replace.
Yeah.
You're down in the concrete and down onto a footing probably. So you
got to
see
on a footing.
Sometimes I've seen these, you can cut them and you can sleeve them with a piece of ID tube. It's an inner diameter tube, right? You can find one, sleeve it down in there, get it back to the foot, right? And then slide your new tube on top of it.
Mm-hmm. Boom, done.
Boom, done.
Thank you.
So Deck Restore.
Oh, my God.
It's awesome stuff.
It's great because we get to redo decks.
That's
now.
Right.
It looks fantastic.
Great
looks
for business.
Great until you start walking around on it,
uh-huh.
Taking your awl and start poking around at spots, and the thing goes all the way through.
That's mm-hmm. right.
And you go, well, this is a rotten board, you know. But they said it was just redone. I said, yeah, it was restored with Deck Restore. It needs a new deck.
Right. That's like the bed liner stuff they spray in
bed
liners for truck. Yeah. And now they've got it where you just roll it on your deck.
Because it becomes a monolithic piece of plastic. And we got a house in in Hawthorne Woods, right? They did all the siding with it, a cedar siding on it. And it's a tongue and groove run at a 45-degree angle. And it doesn't look like anything's wrong. That's the problem with these products. Everything looks totally intact until you start to peel it away because the paint itself stays intact, despite what the underside may look like.
And it's not structural. You can't walk on it.
Right. Yeah, no, it doesn't hold the house up very well.
I actually disclaim the stuff when I see it.
Yeah. Oh, really?
You can't tell.
You have to, you pretty much have to.
They pour it in the cracks, and you can't really tell until you start poking around.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the thing. And once you penetrate it, you start to peel it. Now it comes off in sheets and layers, so you can't even really disturb it because, you know, you'll have a whole mess on your hands.
And then I get yelled at.
That's right. Uh-huh. Yeah, I could see that. Hey, you're taking my house apart. No, that's just, don't worry, that's just the paint.
Yeah, so the deck restore stuff, I don't know. It's flips. A hider. Exactly. It's used for flips for people to hide and cover up stuff.
Yep.
If you're trying to buy another year out of two of your deck because you don't have the money to replace it, okay, fine. You're tired of power washing it every year. Go ahead and use it, but realize that it's still the moisture. What it does is it helps trap moisture in that wood.
You bet it does.
And now that rots out even faster.
You bet it does. It does not breathe. It is absolutely, you know. And listen, you're gonna get some type of a water intrusion in a joint or where you paint underneath something. And
well, just the humidity from underneath.
Absolutely.
Well, what makes worse that situation is when you find no flashing on buildings mm-hmm. at the house. So it's already been built wrong. You don't know how much damage has been done to the house with no, or when they built it, they didn't put flashing on because dad built it on the weekend mm-hmm. and didn't know what he was doing.
Nailed it right over the siding.
Yeah, right, exactly.
The vinyl siding.
Yeah. Or the old aluminum siding.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think, the thing to realize is that, like you said, Ron, it is, okay, fine, I want to eke a little more time out or maybe it's in good condition. But it's not a silver bullet.
No.
Don't kid yourself. It is not some magic bullet that's going to repair and refix, restore, right? The word is misleading. Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
It doesn't restore anything.
Well, Jeff, we appreciate your time today. Jeff from HomesteadInspectionsLLC.com, right?
Yep.
Correct.
And phone number?
773-457-4542.
Okay, do it again and slower.
773-457-4542.
So that's for home inspections. If you're buying a home, home inspections. If you're selling your home, get it inspected before you put it on the market. You need a service. Just have him come out and check things out every 5 years or so. He can do that for you and mold.
And you can also check NACHICHICAGO.org if you want to find another inspector where I don't cover.
Right.
There you go. Perfect. And that sounds like a great service, Jeff, that preventative.
All right, good. We'll be back right after this with your gardening questions.
Sounds good.
You're listening to
Mighty House.
This is Mighty House. Mighty House will return. This is Mighty House with Ron Cowgill. Answering all of your toughest questions about home repair. Get all your answers from the experts. This is Mighty House.
We're broadcasting worldwide and live at MightyHouse.net and TuneIn.com. Just look for Mighty House. Podcasts and previous shows available at MightyHouse.net, iTunes, SoundCloud, the GLN Network, and on HomeImprovementUSA.com. And you can find links to all of them at MightyHouse.net. Follow us on Facebook by looking for Mighty House Home Improvement Show. And our Twitter handle is at Mighty House. And your gardening questions, we'll take them right now, 773-763-9278. And we still have a full house, but we've changed up. Jeff from Homestead Inspections is gone, and we now have Laura
from Red's Garden Center.
Awesome. Hey, all right, so
and now green onion.
No, before we go anywhere, last week we forgot, we just went right into it and started asking you questions and stuff, so that we got to play the open.
What's green onion?
No, it's green onions, though, isn't it? It's plural.
It is. I believe it is a plural.
I think it's a plural.
Oh. You want some?
I thought you're like, you said you're from Red's Garden Center and green onion. I'm like, what's green onion?
No, this is green onion.
Okay, this is green
onion.
I
thought onions. It was another organization you were involved with. I'm like, what? Man.
The Mighty House Greenhouse is sponsored by Devon Bank, your home improvement financing experts. They're locally owned, independent, and committed to our community since 1945. They're great people, and I personally recommend that you visit them online at devonbank.com. That's devonbank.com. What do you got for us, Laura? Because
I wanted to say something. I thought the last segment on home inspection was interesting. Mm-hmm. And one thing that we get called out a lot for at Red's, people buy a new house and they did not get, they've had the house inspected. But another thing you need to look at is inspecting your landscape. Because you can buy a house and have a tree problem or some other issue that's going to cost you a lot of money.
Yeah,
to
you get
fix.
A big tree taken down.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, we talked about that when I was on the show a few weeks back, what, a month or so, like we did a tip about the exactly right, same thing, because we bought a property and we lost a ton of trees, and we, didn't occur to us, hey, that's a lot of value right there.
So I think that when you're going ahead and evaluating something, especially a property purchase, especially if it's got a lot of trees and things, I would call an arborist out.
Absolutely.
Or call somebody from Red's Garden Center in Northbrook. And come out and look at the property. Because people, I've gone out as part of this garden coach thing I do at Red's. I go out to people's properties after they buy them. They're concerned about how to take care of things and stuff. And then I start to look around and say, oh my gosh, you're going to have a drainage issue here. You're going to, you know, this is going to be very expensive for you to take care of. Have you planned for this? And I think if that was done up front.
So does a 10% discount count to the inspections also?
No. It counts towards the purchase of products.
That was a good. It was a nice try.
Yeah. Well, how much does that inspection cost for you to come out and do the inspection?
We charge, like, for me to come out is $75 an hour.
Oh, okay.
A 1 hour
and
minimum.
So you get your 10% discount because you bought it, right?
No. You get on retail items, not on services.
Only, so if you go into Red, say, Mighty House, and you get 10% discount,
yes,
right?
In fact, last week, a listener came in. She wanted to meet me.
See?
So we talked.
Go see Laura.
She bought some products, and she got 10% off.
Very nice.
That was very nice, and she was very happy.
Hey, 10% off is better than zero, right?
Yeah.
Better than a poke in the eye.
That's correct. Well, anything's about better than that.
And, you know, now is a nice time to come in because, you know, stuff is changing for autumn. Pumpkins are out, corn stalks, mums.
Is it too late to be putting in those lettuces and that kind of stuff, the kales and planting that kind of stuff? Is it too late to plant that stuff now? Or
Do you mean to eat or for decorative purposes?
Yeah, for eating.
No. It's not too late. When we get the first frost, sometimes those things, if it's a heavy frost, they'll die. But if not, they actually are tastier because they get sweeter.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So I just planted some lettuce and kale seeds a few weeks ago. They're starting, and radishes,
seeds.
They're starting to come up. And then I'm going to be putting...
stuff.
Yeah, I'm going to put some, make a plastic tent and put it over it to kind of... keep
extended.
It a little warmer there.
So it gets its personal personal
greenhouse.
Atrium.
It gets its own structure.
There
what
you
about
go.
Reseeding the lawn?
Now's a good time to do that, although we are getting to the point where it might be getting a little
too
late.
About 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
3 weeks ago.
So is now a good time, or are we at the point where it's too late?
I would say it's
before
it's
the
on
next
the
week?
Edge. I would not. I would get it done very quickly because we don't know. The first frost date, I think, is October 10th or something like that.
No.
Oh, is it that early? Is that right?
Yeah, it is early. So, and if you put the seed down and it starts to germinate and we get frost.
You may lose it. Yeah. But you're down here where it's warmer. See, now the outlying suburbs. No, really. Listen, you get out west where I am, it gets a lot cooler in the evening. We'll have a much heavier frost than you guys will
down
here.
No, you're right. You do.
So depending on where you live within Illinois, it makes a difference.
That asphalt helps us. Keeps us warm.
It does. No question about it.
Well, and especially if you're along the lake, too.
Right. It moderates the temperatures. Mm-hmm. You bet.
So, but I would say that
you got a week
you're
left.
Right on the edge. Right on
so
the edge.
Pull up all the grass that's no longer attached to anything because all the grubs ate it.
Yeah.
I got the same problem.
Basically, what do? Pull up the whole lawn and then reseed it?
Do you have that big of a problem?
Everybody does.
The Japanese beetles were brutal this year.
I don't have that problem.
I have one. I was just pulling up some along the driveway, you know, just pulling up some grass.
Just peel up like carpet.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And like I had a grub for every 3 inches. That I would pull up.
Oh, my.
So here's what you do. Go find some skunks and just turn them loose
in
your
yard. I'm surprised the skunks haven't come to town.
Plenty of skunks.
You know what I did? When we had that happen once. There was like an area. It wasn't very big, but you could pull it up like a rug.
Yeah.
And all underneath there were all these white C's, the grubs, and I squished every one of them.
Oh, poor guys.
And left them on the soil, you know, to add organic matter. Mm-hmm. And then I put clear plastic over it to solarize it so the sun hits the soil and kill anything else that was in there, and then reseeded it.
Clear plastic,
compost on it.
Clear plastic or black plastic?
I put clear.
Okay.
At that time of the year.
Yeah, it'll do it in.
Yeah, and that kills weeds and everything else because I had some creeping Charlie and stuff in there too.
Yeah,
why they're not eating my lawn is because there's so much creeping Charlie.
You know what? I've got creeping Charlie too. I was trying to read up on that, Laura. You could confirm this for me. He said the best time to treat that if you're going to do it chemically is right after the first frost and it's already been weakened a little bit because it's so tough to do it in.
But you can eat it. So just start picking it.
You can fight it for years.
Yeah, well.
Start picking it and put it in your salad.
I've accepted it.
Oh, I'm not at the acceptance stage yet.
You know, another good time to get it actually is in the spring before the it starts to rain and everything. It's all dried up.
Okay.
And you can kind of use a rake or a fork or something and actually
just try to get some of
it
up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been fighting a losing battle. That's probably because I mow a little too low. And every time you chop it up, you just accelerate the spread of it. Every time you hit that creeping charrow and you chop some piece, it just turns into more pieces.
It actually reproduces.
And it is so pervasive.
Yeah. Well, why don't you mow higher?
Well, it doesn't look as good. Well, I got so many weeds.
It's actually healthier for the lawn.
I know. But the problem is I got so many weeds in my lawn. The lower I mow, the more it turns green.
But, you know, the higher you mow, the more you shade the weeds.
Right.
And the better root system.
I usually mow about 3.5 or 4 inches. That's usually pretty high.
That is good.
You know, but the creeping Charlie it's going to. I got 2 acres of grass, so it's tough to keep up with.
Wow, that is.
Yeah, it's a lot of mowing.
Yeah, the creeping Charlie, and you're right, too. When you start chopping it up and spreading it, if it lands on a nice piece of soil or something, it roots and it goes to town. So
that's the amazing thing. You know, when we're looking at planning, my wife, we just blew our landscaping budget, right? So we started at $10,000, we finished at $22,000, and we're still not done. So, hey, for all the listeners out there that think they go over budget with projects, listen, I'm a contractor, right? I don't do landscaping or stuff. I more than doubled my budget, okay?
Right.
So we're all guilty. Yeah, isn't that amazing? But we're looking at planting a lot of ground cover. And what do you recommend? What's the best ground cover?
I got some Marshall strawberries for you that'll just
well.
You
know, it's interesting.
We have a ton of mulch, and the mulch always seems to get weeds in it, and you know it just becomes a big maintenance thing. So, what's the best way to suppress that? What's the best thing to plant?
Well, first thing, this is great because today I'm at 2 o'clock. I'm doing a talk called "The Scoop on Mulch."
Okay.
And
clever title.
Yes, very clever. And we're talking about three things: traditional organic mulch, which is bark and all that stuff.
Sure.
Inorganic mulch, which could include plastic or rock or everything. And the third category is living mulch, which is ground cover and cover crops.
Okay.
And don't plant ivy.
Okay.
Because I have spent this week pulling out ivy that I planted like 20 years ago that's now everywhere.
I think we're leaning towards Pachysandra. I think
Pachysandra is a beautiful ground cover. It's expensive.
Well, of course it is. That's probably why my wife wants it so much.
Yeah, it takes a while to spread. But it's a beautiful ground cover. Another nice ground cover is vinca.
See, when I thought about that one.
Because it gets blue flowers. Ajuga is also a very nice ground cover, though a bit invasive. You can get some variegated varieties of it that are beautiful, and it gets a beautiful purple flower.
Now, I thought the vinca was real invasive, and that's probably, we were steering away from that.
Vinca is not very invasive, no.
Where does it rate near Pachysandra? Or?
Well, Pachysandra is the least invasive because it's hard to establish.
Oh, okay.
And And sometimes the other thing too about ground covers that you have to be careful of is if you plant all one type of ground cover over a large space, you're creating a monoculture, which is just like your grass, and it's prone to disease. And Pachysandra is.
It is prone to that, huh?
Yeah,
okay.
It is prone to
disease. Yeah, no, we did a berm, so we did this beautiful Kentucky coffee tree, right? Some outcropping rocks. We did a burning bush. We've got some. I can't even remember what all's in there, you know, some different evergreens of sorts and junipers and things like that. But yeah, there's so much mulch at such a large space. It's, you know, how do you maintain that and suppress the weeds and keep them down without having to, you know, spray them chemically all the time? And it just becomes a lot of maintenance.
Well, a lot of...
For the do-it-yourself or landscapers.
Organic mulch works pretty well. If you know, I mean, bark and things, especially bigger chunks, because it breaks down slower. Okay. It doesn't float away.
I hope we're helping the listeners. I'm just here at the radio show to get my own advice.
Well, dude, that's what I do. I come in here and I just start questioning on stuff.
Well, unfortunately, this ties into what I was thinking
about
for today. Anyway,
it's the
time of the year.
Yeah.
But I think the living mulches are very nice, and in fact, you can use them underneath your perennials too to provide layers.
Okay.
And suppress weeds as well. So I and now is a great time to plant.
Okay.
Yeah, so right. I would highly encourage to.
I got
to
strawberries for you. You want some? Got some
those
strawberry
are
plants.
Also used as.
I tried
organic
strawberries.
Mulches.
I couldn't get them to do anything.
These things are weeds, man. They go everywhere. they've taken over the garden area. I'll give you one plant. They'll take over your 2 acres in one summer.
Really?
Another nice ground cover for sun is sedum.
Yeah, and you know what? We love the seed, and we had a ton of it when we bought the property. We got rid of it all because it attracts bees so much. And not that bees are a bad thing, but they are for my wife because she's deathly allergic to them.
So am I.
And so we had to, we kind of had to put a, the kibosh on the sedum.
Well, anything that flowers is going to attract a bee.
Yeah.
But if that's an issue, then really try the vinca.
Okay.
It's just, I think it's beautiful, and it you can is. Get variegated vinca, but when it's blooming and it's got those
now,
beautiful...
Now, explain to us, for us laymen, what does variegated mean?
Variegated
oh,
means
variegated.
That the leaves have are not just green. They have different colors in them.
Oh, okay.
So they could be white and green.
You ready?
Boom. Yes. Anyway, stop over at Red's, 3460 Dundee Road in Northbrook, or contact me, Laura, at redsgardencenter.com.
Excellent.
Very nice.
Thanks, Laura.
Thank
Thanks,
you. Laura. That's
always great,
great
having you here.
Great advice.
All right, we'll be back right after this. You're listening to
Mighty House.
This is Mighty House. Mighty House will return.